outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, I think we've got some unfinished business, Kyle. We keep talking about things we'll talk about that we don't talk about.
Yeah, that pile's getting a little tall. I think we're getting backed up a little bit.
It is. And one of them, we didn't promise we'd talk about it again, but everybody else is talking about it with me. So I figure we probably ought to go back and talk about it again so I get so many emails. Early this year, I talked about how I do this strange thing of reliving the previous year on the days that kind of unfold, and how this was going to be maybe tough to get through May. And a lot of people really expressed concern for me, praying for me, trying to fix that, you know, encouragement. Don't go back to the past. Can't go back to the past. Well, you can't help what your mind does. It just does that. But about a week into this year, Sarah and I were talking about it, and it seemed like God impressed on us he wanted to make this part of the redemption story too. When I kind of got that nudge in my heart, I went, now that's interesting, because I see this as the painful bit. I like everything that happens after about May 19, but prior to that, man, reliving some of that pain. And yet if that pain is part of the redemption, which, you know, Sarah recently had surgery, she's recovering from shoulder surgery and doing very well, but the surgery part of that is the painful part of that, right? It's doing the things that need to be done so the shoulder can heal. And if that's what these first 4 months of this year were, five months, then you know what? That's a different thing as God writes that redemption story. So we're kind of experiencing that now as we're kind of approaching Valentine's Day. We'll be talking about that a little bit. And then my birthday and just how God has positioned that these things, I'm still not ready to say needed to happen, but that they happened opened an incredible door. And so this is part of the redemption story. It's the part we, I guess, never want to look at. We only want to see glory and joy and everything's fixed and wonderful. And we're not good. And in fact, I'm working on a blog about this. We're not good at holding pain and holding God's presence in pain and realizing that suffering, even though every New Testament writer tells us that suffering is a fertile seedbed for God to grow things in our heart that are powerful and wonderful.
How is that? I guess as you're processing that and you're working through even these into February, moving towards the time that you guys were in Colorado Springs and just some of those memories, like, what is that like for you? What's going on in your heart as you are pressing towards some of those dates and some of those big things now, looking back at what you know now?
Yeah, I'm not working that hard at it, you know. The thoughts come up just like on a walk or times when I'm idle. My normally conscious mind is really focused on some beautiful other things that I hope we get to on this podcast as well. So I'm not trying to process that story. It's just when it comes up with me or Sarah, she feels embarrassed by what she's done, what she did. Like, how could I have ever gotten in that frame of mind? But it's not her. It's what trauma did to her. And it's what she believed from this therapist that I was the cause of the PTSD. So she's making the best decisions. We heard this could be one of the best things I heard last week, but it was talking about trauma. And I've always seen like PTSD and trauma as just, you know, a faulty brain dealing with a normal situation. That's because I've never known trauma or know that I've known trauma. Not that I haven't had traumatic things happen to me, but I somehow have the ways to process it with others that it doesn't get embedded. But the phrase was this: trauma is a normal response to an abnormal circumstance. And I thought, wow, that's been really helpful to Sarah. It's just an abnormal circumstance. The brain's doing what it was designed to do. How does it handle pain? And if it doesn't process out, then it hides, or the body reacts in ways that are meant to draw attention to it. So you can get some attention on it. And I it's beautiful, I think, in that Sarah and I are getting able to, because we'll look at when something comes up, we'll go, so where's the redemption story in that? And that may not come for a couple of days. We don't just try to make up an answer. We're going to let God kind of bring it about when he's ready to bring it about.
Wow. It'll be interesting to see just how that unpacks and continues to unfold, because I mean, you're talking about a different experience, right? Like, as you've gone through a lot of the healing process of the, you know, having the trauma being brought into the light, having the memories, working through those memories, now it's almost like you're circling back to some of the memories that you and Sarah had created and some of the things that were going on there, and allowing God to move in that space too, and kind of unravel even some of the reactions or some of the spaces. Like Jess and I just had we had a bit of a moment where I was definitely moving out of more of a trauma brain space and was venting about some things. And even as I'm saying them, I'm like, I'm fairly certain that's not overly accurate or disproportionate or not in alignment with what actually happened. But right now my brain is translating it as that. And so Jess and I just even working through that and processing that space. And so, yeah, it'll be really intriguing to see as you guys move into redeeming some of even, you know, your birthday, and how do you navigate that? Like what are going to be some of the emotions and the spaces there? And what is the bond and the relationship strength between you and Sarah going to look like as you go to celebrate some of those key milestones that had some things attached to it last year?
Yeah. Well, Valentine's Day will be up first, so we'll see how we navigate that. And somehow the reaction right now is simply that is less important. The pain of what happened is less important now than it was even a month ago.
Yeah.
It's a reality. We got it in the story, but it's something that God took and did something very beautiful out of that we are getting to live the fruit of now. So that's amazing.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to the February 3rd episode of The God Journey, number 890 or some crazy thing. It just keeps on rolling. We can't shut up long enough to get off the air.
We keep getting all this huge pile of stuff that we've got to circle back to.
Well, let's keep the conversation going then. What's the best thing you heard this week? You got some?
I do. So I got into some interesting conversations this week about addiction, and was talking about addiction, and my supervisor asked me, Kyle, what is the opposite of addiction? Man, I had to pause and really think about it. And as we kind of flushed out the conversation, it landed on the space of the opposite of addiction is connection and healthy, authentic relational connection. And we started talking about this concept of the therapeutic web of support. And what does it look like to what have
the therapeutic web of support? It sounds like a Spider-Man kind of something.
There's some Spider-Man-esque to it, but the whole idea was if you're standing in the center of this web and you only have one string or one thread of attachment that's going to one relationship or one connection or one support system, then you're much less likely to be able to navigate a challenging situation in a healthy way. But the more connections, the more support systems, the more resources that you have in this web of support around you, the better you are able to navigate challenging life situations, trauma, et cetera. And so I was reading this article that was talking about, it's by Bruce Perry. He's a neuropsychologist. He actually developed the neurosequential model of education, which is a whole scientific psychological theory. I know, I'm nerding out here.
Really?
The interesting part was that he talked about, we were talking about early childhood, and I was reading this article and it said, the brain is a use-based organ that changes in response to patterned, repetitive activity. The brain is a use-based organ that changes in response to patterned, repetitive activity.
That was the best thing you heard last week. You got to explain it. I'm like, God, hey. Even the web of whatever didn't end up where I thought it was going to. So,
well,
what do you get out of that?
For me, the way that I use my brain, the way that I'm thinking about things, the way that I'm processing things, those knee-jerk reactions, right? Like those programmed reactions that I default to. It's because it's a use-based thing. It's because I've used that pathway so many times that that's become my brain's default. But to me, it was really encouraging to be like, okay, as I begin in the healing, as God is taking me into the space of rest, love, and play, that's the space that I'm using more. In that use-based thought, like the more that my mind is dwelling in rest, love, and play and living in rest, love, and play, the more that is the default, the more that is where my mind circles back to. That's where my mind falls back to when a challenging situation arises, or a comet comes up or a potential threat is showing up on my radar, as I live more in that space of rest, love, and play, that becomes my default, even in my brain. That's the way that God structured our minds and the way that we develop. And so it was just, I've been working a lot on my default settings and where I go to, and seeing rest, love, and play worked out in my life in a way that it's becoming more and more of the default. There's a pause, there's a question mark, there's a circling back to his love and his affirmation for me that's becoming more consistent. And it was fun just to have a renowned scientist, neuropsychologist, basically put in his own language the same thing that I've been experientially encountering in my walk with Christ. And so that was why it was a fun thing that I heard this week.
Yeah, the Body Keeps the Score talks about it as neuroplasticity, the ability of the mind when it charts another course. Your defaults may be this way, but if you stop, process, think, watching that happen with Sarah, a lot of her defaults. Yeah. She said, it's a lot of work changing these defaults. And it is, yeah. But I do think that's what the renewing of the mind is. If you can do what you say and just take a pause, okay, I want to react this way. What other option, if I got God's love inside of this, how might it change the way I respond? And then that becomes a very beautiful thing. I love that too.
What about you?
Oh, I'm going to stick with the one I started with, which is, what was it? I don't remember what I said. Why does anybody listen to this podcast? We can't even remember 3 seconds later. I already shared mine, so. I do want to read this letter from someone, and this is someone with a great sense of humor. Years ago, we got an email from someone. They signed off TACL, tight-assed Christian lady, with apologies to those who are offended by that language. So this lady wrote in shortly after that, and she signed off as RALLL, which is relaxed assed lady living loved or something like
that. Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, so this is that. The same gal as that, but she signs off this time as TRALLL, which is traumatized relaxed ass lady living loved. So pretty soon her sign off is going to be quite large, but we got a chance to meet her, not for the first time. We'd seen him before in another place, but got a chance to meet her on the trip that we had around. And she wrote me this email probably a month ago, so it's a little bit late to get to it, but I've been holding it here because it's wonderful. She said, I had stopped listening to the God Journey in 2010 after having that revelatory aha moment of knowing that I'm truly loved by the Father. I have lived and continue to live in that reality to this day, and for that I'm truly thankful. That reality has sustained me through the deaths of my second and third siblings and all the unanswered questions as to sexual abuse they suffered but would not talk about. For so long, I was hung up on trying to find out the truth behind their suffering. Then my friend asked if I'd listened to the God Journey lately. She gave me a brief overview of Sarah's story, and I quickly caught up on her trauma story and her healing journey. Sarah and Wayne, thank you for sharing your time and valuable hearts during this journey. And even more so, thank you for stopping by our house to share an evening with us and some others, living loved individuals that were in attendance. All of them expressed interest and enthusiasm in continuing the journey together. But Wayne and Kyle, the bow on the package of this package in my heart came with the podcast you recorded last year where you referenced unhealthy family systems. Quote, the only people you've been taught you can trust with your stuff is your family, but the people who are abusing you are your family, end quote. This is my family. I don't know details about the abuse that my siblings suffered, but I know my mom had something to do with it, and she's still living. I know she suffered abuse as a young child, too, and that has given me compassion for her story that I did not want to have in the past. She has processed her estranged relationship with my deceased brother and sister with the overarching label of their mental illnesses. Your comment in the podcast. Quote, the person who controls the family system by manipulating everybody with lies, they are the people of the lie, and everyone else around them has mental health issues, and the main perpetrator of those issues never gets exposed, end quote. She actually listened to the podcast because we said something like that. That describes our current family situation. Wayne, you express gratitude that Sarah's perpetrators were all dead. What do you do when the perpetrator is still alive and is very much present in your life? Kyle, there's been so much healing with your dad. How did that come about? What would you do if he were still stuck in his old abusive patterns? What do I do when comments are still strewn about the mental disease in an ever defensive manner, a dismissive manner? And poking the bear seems completely impossible at this point in our relationship because she has suffered the loss of three children. My poor mom, signed off TRALLL. Man. Ooh. And I love the journey. It sounds dire here. It does. This is a lady who, man, is really living in some newfound freedom, some joy in the last decade or so of finding freedom. But this is the tough one. When your family is the abusive system, when the person who is causing it, and I know this well, the person causing it presents themselves as holier than thou, and I've got it all figured out, and everyone who doesn't do what I think they should do gets marginalized, gossiped about, and shredded. What do you do when they're still alive? What would you do if your dad was still in the same space he was in, Kyle?
First, I would have had to maintain some of the boundaries that I established in that relationship early on when Jess and I first got married. And we had some conversations about if X, Y, and Z behaviors start to come up, we love you. We want to continue to try to find a way into relationship with you. However, we do not want to allow some of those things to continue to impact the family that Jess and I were creating. And basically said, that's going to stop, that I don't want my wife to have to experience those things. And I don't want my daughters to have to experience some of those things. And so we had a pretty intentional setup plan of boundaries that we had put into place in order to just protect in the event that some of those behaviors and some of those outbursts, that type of thing, started to come up again. It's hard because thankfully there's been so much trust that has been reestablished as over the years, there's been a repetitive movement towards healing on both parties' behalf. So in my world and in his. Now, are both of us perfect? No, not at all. Right. Are there still some things that come up, or, you know, old pattern stuff that shows up? Yeah. But the consistency and the intensity isn't there, like it isn't as present as it was in the past. And so to be able to invite my daughters into that, to be able to invite my wife into that and not have to worry about them experiencing some of the challenges that I did. I mean, I think those are blessings. And if for whatever reason, those things started to show up again, Jess and I already have created a plan to move and set up some relational boundaries in that way.
Yeah. I think what we have to say is that there's no principled way to navigate this. So what you can do to love your mom, to be in her life and ignore her comments that are dismissive about your dead siblings, then do that. Are you going to change her at this stage in her life? Probably not. So I might, because I'm that kind of guy, I might say, you know, when you keep referring to that as mental illness, mom, there's a part of my heart that hurts. I wish you wouldn't do it around me. I mean, it's okay to say things like that to people. And if they persist, you just have to say, like you said, find an appropriate boundary. This is, if we can, and I've had to do this with people, if you can't be kind and tender, if every time you talk to me, you're going to make accusations that I've already told you aren't true, but you want to believe the truth, then I have to give you the gift of distance. I don't want to. I love you. I'd rather be in your life like I was before. But right now, when you've decided to find your refuge in deceit and lies, and you may not even know that, you may be as sincere as you can be, but you can't let go of it at least enough to have a civil, tender conversation, then we're not going to have a lot of relationship. Now, every day I can look for that to change. So there's always a space of,
correct,
God, how are you leading? How are you showing? If something changes, I'd be all in. It'd be awesome, but I can't make it happen. And I think we're navigating not only our trauma, the trauma's in the family and the family's holding all that. I helped a lady with the book last week. She's written a book, a therapist who contacted me. And it's about being the person who breaks the family, the generational family stuff. And it's really got some good stuff in it from her own story. She was the first one to step out of this very destructive system. And it's cost her. I mean, anybody who does, it costs. Yeah. But you make a change not only for you, but for all the progeny that come after you. And whether it's breaking the bondage of legalism, whether it's a traumatized abuse thing, whatever it is that you're breaking. And we have a lot of people in the God journey who are the first ones in their families that saying, I am not going to raise my kids in the legalism I grew up in. And that costs you something with your family. It just does, because that people are only legalistic because they feel like they have to be to maintain their salvation. So in their world, that's their protection. And when you see legalism as a destroyer and you can't be around it, you can't go along with it. And then people who are in legalism, they'll cut you off because, and their fear for your soul, you're going to go to hell because you're not jumping through all these. That's the only reason you're going to jump through hoops like that is if you're afraid of going to hell if you don't, or incurring God's disfavor or whatever. Grace looks like a very scary thing to them. That's just going to be misused. And people are, and there's plenty of people who misuse grace. So they've got a lot of things to, examples to point out. But the person who is the pioneer out of a destructive family system into something full and free in Jesus, to me, I got my respect and admiration, man. I absolutely love that so much.
Yeah, the challenge is that person, again, usually is the one that's going to take it in the teeth, right? Because the first one through the wall, that's usually what is happening, unfortunately. If you really want to be intentional about breaking sometimes multi-generational family system patterns, I mean, that takes a lot of work, a lot of intentionality, a lot of courage. But it's interesting because I'd be intrigued to hear what Sarah's feedback would be on this. But as you begin to move, as you're that individual or that family that says, no, we're not going to carry on in this generational space. For me anyway, I got to watch a incredible miracle start to happen in my life. And I would say, like Sarah, and you've said this, that Sarah's been able to enjoy an absolutely incredible miracle in her life. And as that miracle begins to saturate into my life and my heart and my healing, it begins to leak out and starts to influence other people's journeys and starts to create at least an invitation to move into a different space, whether it be for my extended family or whether it be for friends or people that have access to my life. It starts to move and it starts to at least create an invitation towards freedom and a more wholehearted space.
It does for people that are hungry for that.
Correct.
The system you're breaking free from, it does not enjoy watching you, because they're going to say family first. But like she says, what if the family is the source of abuse?
Yeah,
your family should hold your stuff. Your family should love you, even if you don't see eye to eye on things, even if you have disagreements. That's what families should do.
Yeah.
Families don't often do that. And when that family system, and when you defy the person of the lie, when you refuse to be manipulated, you will pay severely.
I mean, you will. I think as an encouragement to the people that are doing that too, I think even the people that are still in the system, that are still tied into whatever, whether it be a religious system, a family system, whatever it is, watching somebody step out into that freedom and start to live in a different space in their life, I think can be a disruptive catalyst for them to start questioning. You know, I've seen that in both in my work with clients and as well as in my own life, that it starts to, even though it's very disruptive and painful, and they try to make you pay at times for stepping out into those new spaces or creating those boundaries, there's an inkling, there's a curiosity that can get planted in the midst of that, in the midst of the disruption and the discomfort and the get back in line, that can be really catalyzing towards life.
Well, that is the divisive nature of the gospel. Jesus talked about that.
Yes.
Right? You know, I'm going to come to bring a sword. And then we saw that probably in the wrong context. It's just the truth itself is a sword. Those who want it, like you talking about, their disruption, they will see. Like Sarah and I did, that disruption, there's an opportunity here for something better. So either go that way, or man, I want what I had and I'm going to defend it at all costs. And he said, that's what the truth does in the world. It will separate father from son and father from daughter. And it will separate, not because God loves to separate. It's just the truth is worth living in. The freedom of the truth is worth it. It is a clarion call to people who are around it and see it go, ooh, I want to live like that. And for those that want to, I don't know if anybody, maybe the quote we used last week about, you know, white knuckling our way to some kind of justified obedience thing.
Yes.
And yet people who go down the road of this road of being the disruptor in the family to break a pattern that's existed, what the book that I was reading called it was getting out of the generational jail, which is just a great term. And to break free from that is an extraordinary thing. And no one who goes through it, even the pain of it, ever regrets the fact that they've gone on this journey. The healing inside of it, inside truth, inside God's reality is so good that even for whatever pain you may experience, it's worth getting through there. Well, let's go back to discipleship. We really rammed that podcast home a couple of weeks ago. And if you didn't listen to it, you might want to go back. Again, the word makes us puke. I haven't found a better word yet. In fact, when I looked for a graphic to kind of go with that podcast, I often do that to get ideas. I don't abscond with artwork from the internet, but I do go to the internet and go, disciple, images. So I can look at what other people have used and see if I've got anything like that that I can use. Everything that I did for discipleship came up discipline. Everything.
Really?
Discipleship equals discipline. Hebrews 12, God disciplined those he loves. Our whole paradigm, and I think that's why I get this yuck factor. I used to be in that discipleship world because I'm one of those that could, paid on staff at a church. So I could spend an hour a day in scripture and reading and prayer, and it was part of my job. And I could do the discipline stuff. I could always do that stuff. But whether it made you more in his image and set you free, it wasn't until after I began to discover what it meant to live loved, and I already had the affection of the Father. That's where my life in him took on meaning. And it's not that all the scriptural knowledge and things I had from back there was useless. A lot of that came through that window in a very powerful way. But discipline is not the first thing that comes to mind anymore when I think of discipleship. But it's easy, right? Because the words are in there together. Discipline, discipleship are the same thing. They're not the same thing. If discipleship is about following, not about discipline, even though it may take some discipline to learn to follow. I get that. It might, Paul talks about, buffet our bodies and make it our slave, and that we don't want to preach the gospel and then be disqualified ourselves from not embracing its reality. So is there a place in it where we just talked about, I'm willing to follow truth out of the generational jail, even if it costs me. Does that take something? It takes something. It does. Yeah. But the overarching reality to me of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus is not that I'm a disciplined legalist and I follow these religious rituals and I follow them religiously. I guess that's what I want to say. It's that I've learned to follow. I'm learning to follow, better said. I'm not following principles and ideas. I'm following a presence that's hopefully becoming more known in my life with each passing day. I kind of get better at recognizing the fingerprints. I kind of get better at seeing the nudges. I see more of the nudges than I miss. I still don't think I do that, but the ones I don't miss, I love. So bringing us back into that conversation, which we kind of really scuttled in, we kind of came down just, and this is not, just like we had I don't know if you saw the thing on the blog about somebody was having trouble with love, rest, and play. And then you were saying rest, love, and play. So they like, that made sense to them, even though it's the same three words, but they like your version better. So then there's people who like my version better. And so now we're going to have a big tribal war over this at some point.
We're going to get divided. There's going to be a denomination separation.
I'm sure there will over this. This is really key. If you don't get those words in the right order, it's all going to go. Now, I don't care what order you put the words in. And you can add 500 other words to that. I guess the fear was that we were going to create some kind of systematized something out of that instead of, no, it's just describing some reality. And if you want to play first, rest first, love first, I don't care. Just find your way into that. But we're learning to live love. To me, that's really key. We talked about that's kind of, if you want to go to 101, and again, I know this sounds really like organized and people are going to like, and it goes from being something that's helpful to seeing where I'm at in my journey to something where I've got to be evaluated as to my status. And that's the dark side of anything that we could possibly talk about. But I like the idea of learning that I'm loved. And then learning to live in love and live at rest and relax into God's reality and see the playfulness of God, because that helps me recognize a lot of nudges that I miss when I think God's the stern schoolmaster with a ruler ready to beat me over the head if I don't get something right. The more playful part of it is helpful in the journey. And then we talked about that, the transformative trust component that goes in maybe 301, where I'm learning to trust in a way that's transformative in how I live. And then the fourth, the 401, if we got to, and we can do 501 and 601 and 701. we're just having fun with this part of it. Don't make more of it than it is. We're just pulling something out of education that if you went to college, you dealt with, right?
Yeah.
And the 401, we talked about be living a life in agreement with God and his ways. And no one's going to be perfect at any of those four stages. You don't get perfect at one before you move on to two. You don't get perfect two before you never get perfect at four. Because, man, I'm pushing 70 here. And I understand, somebody told me recently, when you turn 70, which is only a couple months away, people will no longer care about what you have to say. So maybe that's where the podcast ends. It ends when I turn 70.
On your 70th birthday?
Yeah, I'm always looking for a way to end this thing. So, and there's somebody in education. I guess for them, it was a complete cut. As soon as they turned 70, that was it. No one cared about anything they had to say.
Really?
Which is strange to me because I have traveled around the world to talk to men and women who are older than me on this journey. I love talking to men and women in their 70s and 80s and even 90s who've lived this journey and been softened by the wonder of God's love and learning to live loved and learning to see more of him and live in that kind of agreement. Does that four sound good to you? Or if you put it into four, would you want to push some envelopes there?
Honestly, as you were just talking, the thing that really came to my mind was actually a picture of my grandma, who is in her late 80s now. And Wayne, this is what I love about her. And this is what's so inspiring to me about her, is she literally was taking online classes exploring different elements and characteristics of who God was because she wanted to learn more. This is somebody who's been walking with God for a very, very long time and has been an inspiration to me. And yet her hunger to know more of who he is and to walk with him, and her even calling me and saying, "You'll never believe what I discovered about God today." And it's like, oh my gosh, like her insatiable curiosity at who he is over a lifetime, man, that's incredible to me.
Yeah, and I love people that are finding that inside a growing relationship where it's just, you know, God's tenderized them. They've learned humility from the inside, not something they act on from the outside, trying to be more humble or trying to be more loving or trying to, but they've watched that transformation happen on the inside. And to me, that's what it's all for. It really... Yes, God wants us to live loved, and knowing we're loved, but that wasn't meant then to we just gonna enjoy the rest of our lives, that there's purpose God's unfolding in the earth. There's people to love. Sarah's gone on this journey of trauma. We had a trauma group before her surgery. We're having another one this weekend. We had 12 or so people. We just talked through trauma on a Zoom thing from all over the world, with people in Europe and Canada and Australia. And now we followed up individually with some of those just because we felt like they wanted something that even 12 in a room wasn't helpful enough. And not as counselors, we're just encouragers, but people need a little sense of where might God be in this for me? Like I'm lost in this and I'm praying for this and this hasn't happened. And so I feel like God's abandoned me instead of, no, just like Sarah's trauma did and the trauma therapist that sought to help her the first time, she vested it in the wrong place. And by vesting it in the wrong place, then the things she thought was going to be helpful weren't, and it was more hurtful to her. But then it's kind of saying where God's pointing you, hearing God's voice, feeling that nudge in that stressful moment is what kind of opens the door. And now you'll want to help people. For Sarah, who's wanted to live a pretty private life.
Yeah.
And now, my goodness, we spent an hour on a Zoom call Sunday morning with someone that just, and we had it, man, we got off of it, just went a delightful time. And I guess that's, I was thinking about the podcast today. That's where my life seems to be headed. I still don't know if I've retired because I'm not really doing much more than staying up with life at these moments and caring for Sarah and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But it is going, because of Sarah's heart, more toward people who are holding trauma and have been in it for years and are really confused about where God is in all of that.
Yeah.
And the other part of it is, I'm feeling like God's stirring a calling, not just to me and not just to people I know, but there seems to be God inviting almost a summons. There's that thing in Revelation about this is they who followed the Lamb wherever he went. And no lie was found in their mouth, which I just go, oh my gosh. Those. It also said they never were defiled by women, which I know is going to make women freak out. Like, you got, yeah. So they were virgins is what the King Jimmy says, which I'm already out of that fold. But I, whether or not you have to be a virgin to be in this class of people. I love what he says about following the Lamb wherever he goes, no matter who you are or what age you live in, whether it's the end of the age or not. And then that no deceit, no lie was found in their mouths. They really had found their way into what's true. And I really feel like there's a part of my life I want to invest in those that, yeah, have learned to be, and we're always going to help people learn to live love because everything starts there. If that you don't have in your quiver, then that you need to have. But I also want to aim some stuff at people, and maybe this podcast goes to 401 this year or toward the end, whatever we're doing here, because I really want to help people who've got the loving thing down, growing in trust a bit. I really want to embrace the depths of who God is. And even then, we'll say the depths, but we're probably this deep when you're in the depths. We're probably this deep when we learn to live loved, and we're probably, but being a different person in the world intuitively. Not because I'm trying to, what would Jesus do? Or I'm trying to be like Christ, but that God gets to transform enough of us that in the situations we're in, there's an immediacy. There's just a normal response that's not self-based, but is more godly. Yeah. More like the way God would think. More like the way God would open doors. And I know there's people that are hungry for that. So I'm kind of on two ends of the spectrum. People just lost in trauma, wanting to know a loving God and a way to walk out of that. And people who do feel like there's a lot in their life that was in disarray that God has arranged. And now they're wondering what to do with the rest of their life. They don't. They're not being driven by pain anymore or a need for healing.
Yeah.
But they do have this hunger inside that says, there's got to be something more in God for me and the way I live in a world that, again, the agreeing with God part, where I'm part of his purpose unfolding in the world, not because I need the significance of being part of God's purpose or not because God wants me. That's why he saved me. He saved me to use me. It's not that either. But people who are finding enough health to navigate their journey and now say, man, I want to help others in a way that really helps, that helps them navigate their journey with Jesus. So the 401 stuff is what I want to talk about with people. It's the phone calls I love most right now and hanging out with people just hungry. I don't have a problem to fix necessarily. I just have an unsated hunger to walk with God in a way that's going to have an impact in the world around me.
Man, I love that. It's intriguing to see. Like I think about those conversations and it's like, okay, Lord, what is that going to look like? Because I think that those, especially if we're quote unquote living in the end of the age, like, and I don't know if we are or not, but I feel like those are like those conversations of what does it mean to really walk this out, to live this, to have this saturate my life in a different way. As it's saturating your life, it's starting to leak out in the world around you. I mean, I just had a conversation with somebody about business and this world and like, what does it look like? Like, how far does the kingdom go? Right? Like what, if we're thinking about this and we're thinking about relationship with God and walking in his love, like where does it stop? Does it stop in our personal life? Does it stop in education? Does it stop in business? Does it stop in government? Like what does that look like? How does that, I don't know. I'm just really intrigued by, okay, Father, what, especially as more people, and I'm having these conversations with a lot of young people primarily, and there's that hunger, there's that longing for, I want more. Like I literally had a conversation with a young person a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about the void. And they were talking about all these ways that they've tried to fill the void and yet it hasn't worked. And there's this insatiable. And I asked them, so where do you think the void comes from? And they just paused and they're like, well, I don't know. Like, and they had some thoughts and they had their own responses to that. But it was so cool to be able to start unpacking. No, there is a void there. who is the author of The Void? What is the author of The Void? And what can actually really speak to those heart longings that you haven't been able to silence with some of the other things that you've attempted to, the other imposters or the other counterfeits?
I love that. And I think it's what God's created us to be, right? There's something God made us to be. And we try to satisfy that with all kinds of other things, just amusements, entertainments, and drugs and alcohol and, you know, whatever. And then we play whatever, and I don't mean the more addictive pursuits, but maybe just the more, but you play those out to a point where you go, okay, what, well, it didn't do it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was fun, but life's got to be about more than fun.
Yeah.
And I do think that void is just simply the lack of sync between who I'm made to be, how the universe operates in God, and how the broken universe works in human flesh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I want to lean more into that space where who am I inside the love of the Father, inside his purpose? And when that stuff syncs up, and I don't mean perfectly, I mean just a little bit, that's where fulfillment is for me. Knowing it was loving Sarah through this, even in the painful bits, even where it's cost me a lot, there was a fulfilling wonder that I don't care what else life deals to me. That was as fun, fulfilling, pure as it gets, being alongside something was God was doing in another human being that needed help inside flesh. And in my flesh, God could make himself known in a way Sarah needed it. And other people need it. I mean, the person we talked to this weekend and others, to me, that's the void. There's no void when you live in that space. Mm. And when you try to fill it with other stuff, then it will feel fine for a while. Like even ministry and the being successful at ministry is not necessarily being successful in mission, but while you're being successful in ministry or writing or a book thing or whatever, it's, it feels so good. And then when it all trails off, if the residual is the void again, then I'm still out of sync with something God's inviting me into. And I want to sync with him. And I think, again, love, rest, and play is where that syncing happens. It doesn't happen like, okay, God, tell me what I should do. No, I'm going to enjoy you, listen to you. I'm going to watch you unfold in my life. I'm going to try some things that don't work and go, yeah, that was more Wayne than God. And then find some stuff that it may not work in the sense that I get the result I want, but I get the freedom he has for me. And I get the joy that he has for me. And that's not dependent on how other people. I'm one of those that's used to being manipulated most of my life by people around me. And even when I was in pastoral ministry, manipulated by the affirmations of other people. I love living increasingly free from that. I don't feel like I live in that now. And it has led me to more generous space. And it's led me to another promise, the last part of that chart, which we still haven't gotten to. I thought we would today. I've got it right here. But you know what? The clock on the wall. We're past it. We also want to talk about AI sometime. It's a hot topic, so we can try and do that. And we'll get all this stuff in somehow, folks. Hang in there. Try and get it all in before episode 1000.
Sounds good.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.